This is In Focus, the weekly public affairs program from KTBB and the Team Sports Radio, exploring local, state, and national issues that impact East Texas.
Well, hello, East Texas. Welcome to In Focus. I'm Jeff Rourke here with Melissa Kaiser.
Howdy do.
She and I do the morning show each weekday from 6 to 8 a.m. And in studio with us as well is KTBB owner and general manager, Paul Gleiser.
Hello, hello.
And we're going to start off today with another sort of foreign policy outlook, a whole lot of subjects to kind of select from today and chat over. But I want to start with foreign policy because, once again, the bombs are going boom in Iran. Mm-hmm. We've been blowing some stuff up over there.
Well, you know, Jeff, we have, and it's regrettable that we ever had to blow anything up. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to credit President Trump with admirable restraint so far. Mm-hmm. You know, Iran wasn't always known as Iran. It was Persia. Mm-hmm. And that's what my column this week at You Tell Me Texas is about, is the fact that one time Persia was an enlightened, advanced civilization. Credit Persia, ancient Persia, with algebra, mm-hmm. with the word algorithm we get from there. We, you know, it's the it is the country that really first was able to organize a government that ruled through infrastructure and administration and tolerance rather than just raw autocratic coercion. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a perfect society, and it certainly didn't measure up to what we in the United States of 21st century would call, you know, free and completely dedicated to liberty. But it was not the theocratic hellhole that it turned into following the deposition of the Shah of Iran in 1979. And President Trump doesn't want to reduce the country of 90 million people into a pile of smoking rubble.
Mm-hmm. Well, and on that note, he revealed in the last couple of days that he tried to get arms to the Iranian people so they could overthrow their own government, sort of backing a revolt.
A reverse revolution. The thing is, where I'm going with this, it may come to that anyway, whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
Because the business in Iran has to come to an end. The developed world needs Iran, the malfeasant country that it has been for 47 years, out of the picture. And maritime commerce through the Strait of Hormuz has to resume on a completely free basis. Mm-hmm. And so if the idiots currently running Iran, if the Iran Revolutionary Guard can't be brought to reason, they're going to have to be brought to their knees.
Mm-hmm. Well, given the role that staying on the subject here, given the role that Iran and Saudi Arabia, the two countries, have had in the Islamic world for the last 35, 40, you know, near 50 years now.
Nearly half a century.
Yeah. Given that leadership role that they have, if Iran comes to the table here with some concessions, and if we're able to get to a peaceful resolution of that, could they help lead the Middle East then into peace with the West?
Yes. I mean, and look at what was accomplished in Trump term one in that direction. Mm-hmm. You know, the broader Middle East is coming to terms with Israel, which, you know, one time was unthinkable. You know, this could completely reset the geopolitical picture for the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
But we cannot live with an Iran that has or continues to seek nuclear weapons, because that is an existential threat to peace, really, throughout the world. It could really touch off World War III.
I wonder, Missy, if this peace did happen, and all of a sudden, maybe in the next 15, 20 years, we have Iranians walking around in blue jeans. Whatever will we cover in news?
Yeah, that's a great question. I have no idea.
It would be boring in the newsroom, wouldn't it?
I mean, we'll find something, I'm sure.
Some boredom on that front would be most welcome.
It would be most welcome.
Yes, it would be.
But what immediately, right in the windshield right now, mm-hmm. this business has to be brought to a conclusion,
right.
However yeah. unpleasant that conclusion may be. And mm-hmm. I'm certainly not wanting to reduce 90 million people to mere subsistence,
yeah.
or to, you know, barely getting by, but it may come to that. And if it comes to that, it's because of the leaders that they tolerate or have been forced to tolerate. The Iranian people, their fate kind of rests in their hands. I get that, you know, what was it, 40,000 people got slaughtered in the streets when they dared to speak out. I mean, I understand why they're reluctant to rise up. Something has to give.
Yeah,
and I'm not smart enough to tell you what it is other than to tell you that something has to give. We can't keep doing this.
Yeah, exactly. Well, talking about news, obviously the big news in Iran and the Strait of Hormuz and all that, but also we have some big news here in Texas that came to us here in recent months. It's called the New World Screwworm.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. So made its way to Texas, threatening cattle, beef production, et cetera. Blowback from some on one side saying the government hasn't done enough to protect us from this. On the other side are people saying that too much is being made of this story.
Right. Yes, I agree. I like what Sid Miller said the other day, and I can't quote him directly, but he said, hey, listen, if I found out my cattle had screwworm, I would not report it to the government. I'd take care of it myself. You don't want the government coming in and seizing your cattle. And I get that. But, you know, I'm not a farmer, obviously, so I don't know the extent of it. But it does seem like, you know, they found 2 cases. Now I think it's up to 4 cases in Texas. And that doesn't seem like a big deal yet.
Kind of reminds me of something that happened around late December 2019.
I remember when COVID started and we all thought like, oh my gosh, okay, it seems like they're really blowing this out of proportion.
No, I could give you 6 hours on what we did with respect to COVID that we shouldn't have done. I'm not a rancher either, nor do I aspire to be one. Thank God we have them. Because this kind of hard work that somebody's got to do.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. Listen, I know ranchers. I know people who have, you know, that raise cattle. It is a brutally difficult business. And I'm like Agriculture Commissioner Sid Miller. I'm saying, you know, I'm not going to suck the government into my business if I don't have to, because that can absolutely wipe a rancher out.
Absolutely.
Sure.
But, you know, I know this disease, the screw worm. I hate the name of that.
Yeah.
I know it is potentially could, you know, devastate herds.
Yes.
So I get the threat, but have we lost the art of proportional response to threats, you know?
Well, that last phrase right there leads nicely into another big domestic story here in Texas this week, obviously dominating the news, the Carmelo Anthony trial. Murder of Austin Metcalf at a track meet in what, April of last year, I guess it was. He was tried this week, found guilty, and sentenced to 35 years in prison. He can serve half of that and be eligible for parole. What was interesting here is that those who were involved in the trial said that race was not a component in the trial at all.
Everybody's going to try to turn it into that.
Exactly. Everybody out on the street in front of the courthouse, polarized on both sides of the street, turned it into that. What do you think?
I think if we don't get to the place where we can talk about people with different pigmentation and without it becoming massively politicized, we have to get to that place soon. I thought that this country by now, by 2026, we should be past all of that.
I agree. I can't tell you how disappointing this whole thing has brought a lot of stuff to light.
Yeah.
The arguments, the violence. I'm so disappointed, and I really didn't realize that we were set back this far. I thought we could all get along. I really did.
I mean, I thought that we were going to begin to turn back the tide of racism somewhere around January of 2009. Yeah. That was when it was sold to us.
Thank you for that segue, because I was naive enough to believe that was going to happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Here
yeah.
in a country that in my living lifetime, in my time on the planet, went from black people could not use certain water fountains to a black man being the president of the United States. Now, if you want to tell me that this country hasn't made progress on race, given that, I will look you in the face and call you a blithering idiot, because that is Barack Obama was elected president of the United States twice because white people voted for him.
Right.
Not only do white people vote for him, a majority of white people voted for him. So spare me the, you know, the systemic racism talk and all of that. You know, I would have voted for him if I agreed with his agenda, which I did not. I voted against him because I didn't like his agenda. I did not vote against him because he was black. If Herman Cain had won the Republican nomination for president that year, I would have voted for that black man named Herman Cain
with his 999 plan.
You know, when he was on, you know, his talk show was on KTBB for a while, and I went and visited with him when we put it on. And just to show you how far in the real world, how far we've come, he did his radio show, and then we left, and I followed him in my rent car, and we went to his country club.
Wow.
In suburban Atlanta. Hmm. A black man going to the country, and you know, when we walked in, he was the only black man in the place, except for the people that worked there. Mm-hmm. And we sat down, and we had lunch together, and nobody thought a thing of it. And I didn't think at the time of it, intellectually struck me that here I am in an Atlanta country club being hosted by a black man who's a member of that country club. Mm-hmm. Unthinkable the day I was born.
Sure. Yeah.
I agree. But happening with nobody. Hi, Mr. Cain. How are you, Mr. Cain? Nobody. Everybody glad to see him.
Yeah.
And so he said, no, America is systemically racist. We've made no racial progress. Give me a break.
Right.
Ben Carson, another great
Dr.
example.
Dr. Ben Carson.
One of my favorite political commentators, thinkers, writers is Thomas Sowell.
Thomas Sowell.
Maybe the most intelligent person I've ever read.
We had a black Secretary of State twice in the Bush administration.
Yeah.
A Colin Powell followed by a Condoleezza Rice, both of them black, one of them a woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, so just spare me all of this.
Yeah.
And this young man was not convicted because he was black. He was convicted because he committed a heinous crime.
Mm-hmm. And that leads to another thought I want to ask about. We talked about it before, the Weekend at Bernie's kind of thing, where we prop up this dead corpse of systemic racism and all that. We've been propping that up for a half century now or longer. Has that poisoned the minds of young people so much that their responses are always a scream responding to a whisper? I mean, stabbing someone in the heart because he put his hand on your shoulder seems to me to be
an overreaction
a little bit. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, I it's been hard to wrap my head around.
Yeah.
There's so many elements of this story that are disturbing on different levels. But the level that I'm looking at right now are the parents of Carmelo, and they're so upset. What do they tell their other kids? And then the other parents out there, what do we tell our kids now?
Yeah.
And the answer is obvious. Don't kill people, you know?
Don't kill people. Yeah.
It really is, but I can't tell you how disappointed I am just listening to the race baiting, the false narratives that are going around that have the crowd riled up, and it just seems to be like us against them, and that's not where we should be, like you guys just explained.
You know, you use the phrase race baiting, so you do a segment each morning on the morning show regarding entertainment.
Yes.
What's coming up, that kind of thing. My wife and I watched on Netflix this past week this new documentary about Michael Jackson called The Verdict. It's about his sex abuse trials and all that. And of course, there's a lot of really fallacious stuff in this documentary, and a lot of it that's inaccurate. But one thing that pervaded it was the racial narrative. You know, he couldn't get ahead because he was black and this and that and the other. And I couldn't help thinking, well, okay, the best-selling...
If he can't get ahead.
Couldn't get ahead?
Yeah. Okay. That's what I was thinking.
I hope one day to not get ahead.
I mean,
you know,
pop.
The fact that the best-selling album ever, 44 years later, is still there. It's still Thriller.
Right.
And I'm thinking, okay, at the time, the black population was around 11% of the country, so it was a lot of white kids buying that album.
Mostly white kids buying that album. Sure.
It was my wife buying that album.
Yeah. Right?
My white wife, who quite accurately says that it's brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Rappers are millionaires because white kids buy their
albums.
So there's an
8-year-old Missy Kaiser in her room dancing to Thriller. I was doing the Thriller dance.
There we go. Now there's the video mind shot of the week.
I will not get that out of
You're welcome, guys.
Yeah. But all that to say, I think that there is at least one race in this equation that has generally moved past this idea of this divided America. and one that kind of won't let it go. And I'm not sure that it's black people that are the problem. I think it's the handlers. It's the Al Sharptons and the people like that.
It's the race hustlers, and it's Al Sharpton who make money on it.
He's gotten very wealthy. Right.
Very wealthy guy.
Doing this.
I see Al Sharpton every 4 years, face-to-face, as close as I am to you, at the Democratic National Convention. Hmm. The man wears $6,000 suits.
Sure. It's kind of hard to miss those.
You know, the man, he's wearing suits that I wouldn't begin to pay for. He's gotten very, very rich.
Yes.
And, you know, and his predecessor in that line, or contemporary, the Reverend Jackson, as Rush called it, Jesse Jackson, may he rest in peace, also wore awfully nice-looking suits.
Yes, he did.
And also got very, very rich peddling that. But, you know, the worst thing that could happen to Al Sharpton and the rest of his ilk is for black people one day to wake up and they're in the middle class in the same proportion as white people, they wouldn't have anything to sell.
So
they don't want that.
These guys are making televangelist money.
They're running on the problem, and they can't afford for the problem to go away.
That's a good point.
Real quickly, talking about money and the Anthony trial here, something new that's popped up in the last day or so is the family, the crowdfunding campaign that raised money for Carmelo's defense. Mm-hmm. And now some questions about their spending. We don't know where they moved to, but they apparently moved to get away from, you know, safety concerns.
Okay.
And cover traveling expenses, which I don't know, new cars, new clothes, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff sort of being weeded out right now. But what do you think, Missy? I mean, the crowdfunding, it's cool for people who really need it in some cases, you know, like the firefighter who gets shot by an assailant at a fire and he's got five kids left behind that happened a couple of years ago, raising money for him. That's great. But in this case, what do you think?
You're trying to bait me. I know you are. Well, the God shut down. They have certain guidelines that you have to follow when you're doing these fundraisers. And one of them is committing a violent crime. Mm-hmm. And this GoFundMe or the Send Fund Go, whatever it's called, should never have started to begin with. Yeah, now raised over $600,000 in this case, the latest one. The defense is over with, so any claims that it was going to pay for his defense, that's a moot point at this.
They're going to say now they're just going to fund the appeal.
Well, they're funding now security measures for their family as well because they're facing death threats.
Yeah, as of this morning, another crowdfunding campaign has been started.
I haven't seen that yet.
That one closed down. There's another one now, and it's stated purpose. I didn't get a chance to read all the way through it, but so there's something else on the back burner now. So
anything like that, if you want to contribute to it, it's your money. You know, God bless. Yeah. But know that those things are just wide open invitations to fraud.
Absolutely.
And as Missy mentioned, some of them now do have some guidelines. They've sort of been forced into that by a few news stories.
But still, who audits?
Exactly, who audits?
Yeah, who audits until it gets reported? I mean, who knows?
Yeah. Media duplicity, always a fun topic.
I was in the middle of it last week in New York.
Yeah, well, the Graham Plattner thing. As recently as 6 months ago, conservatives were being called Nazis and fascists. Now we have the media, those same media, backing someone with a Nazi tattoo.
Apologizing, acting as apologists for a guy with a Gestapo tattoo on his right pec.
Exactly. Not just a Nazi tattoo, the Gestapo.
The Gestapo tattoo on his right pectoral muscle. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know, if Jared Kushner had that tattoo.
Oh my.
You know, it would be nonstop.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're just trying to memory hole it. And, you know, what I would like is intellectual consistency from the media, and I'm talking about all media. I'm talking about the legacy guys and then the new media guys, which I don't know, Fox has been around long enough to where it's hard to call them new media, but nevertheless, you know, I'll give you a little personal story. I got my hair cut yesterday, and I was sitting next to, and there was a woman sitting there, and we're having this conversation, and she finds out I'm in the media business, and what do you do? And when people ask me, I sound on radio stations, well, what do you do? I need to start saying, well, it's country music.
Because I did play some country music this morning. So yeah, there you go.
I'm because I said, I'm news and talk and all sports. Oh, you're one of those.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Because I just don't believe a word that comes out of you, and you people are out there from just, you know, pushing hate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I listen to NPR because I want the real news.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. Good luck with that.
And I said, you know, let me tell you something. I've owned this radio station for 3.5 decades. And if anybody pushes hate, they'll be fired within seconds.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm not pushing hate. We're trying to run an operation that simply delivers information that people can then act on as they see fit, based on what they believe. We're not pushing hate. And there's nothing hateful about believing that small government, low taxation, light regulation is a good thing for the economy. There's nothing hateful about that.
Not at all.
And that's really the conservative position in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. And I didn't say anything this to her because it's like, you know, arguing with a yapping chihuahua. You can't, you know, you're not going to get anywhere.
Right.
And I said, well, you know, listen, I'm NPR. That's a fine operation. I know some people that work at NPR in Washington. They're very, very smart people. I just caved. But the fact is, we don't have a media that a legacy media that can be trusted. That's the reason this radio station, after what, 70 years as an ABC affiliate, quit being one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Now, I will say this, though.
Yes.
He said that we don't push hate here.
Yeah.
If anybody ever declares that snakes have rights, we'll have to change that because...
I thought we were going to talk about Bill Coates.
You're not a fan of snakes.
Snakes,
so.
Bill Coates, same difference. Yeah, but, okay.
No, I think it's okay to hate snakes.
I'm with you.
Thank
on that
you.
One.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's okay to hate snakes.
Yeah. The Bible says, I shall put enmity between thee and the woman.
Okay. So there you go. Okay.
There it is.
All right. So, listen, something else here that happened. Doug Burgum, Interior Secretary, announced that they're cutting, the federal government is cutting partnerships with 43 different groups that are involved in DEI, something called environmental justice, and services for illegal immigrants, saying that the groups, quote, no longer represent the priorities of the American people. And these are just some of the nearly 2,000 private entities the government is currently partnered with.
Prima facie evidence that Doug Burgum is racist.
I mean, of course.
That's exactly where that's going to go.
Yeah, yeah.
Not that it's a grotesque waste of taxpayer money. Mm-hmm. And that he's trying to not waste money, and he's trying to actually, you know, it's about making Rocky Mountain National Park enjoyable for people who want to visit. That's his job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, media schools need to offer scholarships for, you know, aspiring radio hosts with red hair, that kind of thing, you know?
Yes.
I mean, DEI. There you go. That
was part of our DEI program. Is it a redhead? Okay, come on.
Okay, well, let's go to some lighter stuff here on that note.
Wow.
Some fun sports stuff this week. The congressional baseball game happened this week.
If you want to see some truly awful baseball, you ought to go
well,
to the game.
Well, I have to say, though,
did you see the catch? Senator Eric Schmidt of Missouri,
50 years old, laying out for a ball.
Really?
He caught it just outside the right field or left field line and face planted. Uh-huh. And got turf burn on his nose and was bleeding.
But he caught the ball.
Well, awesome play.
Can I just say, 50?
Spectacular catch.
You're saying 50 like it's some, like, let's get the wheelchair out for the 50. I'm 50. I feel like I could do that.
I could do it.
I could do that.
Now, I'm a 50-year-old guy. I played baseball. The one position I never...
my God.
Well, I'm in my 50s, let's put it that way.
Okay.
But when I played ball, the only position I didn't play was catcher, but I have a pitcher for a son. So I've been in a catcher squad for the last 10, 12 years.
Sure.
The knees are feeling it, but, you know, I can still do it. So there you go. But I wouldn't mind being in Congress just to play baseball.
I stand by my statement that if you want to see some truly awful baseball. Nathaniel Moran, about 2 or 3 years ago, I was in Washington anyway for a National Association of Broadcasters event. Mm-hmm. And Nathaniel invited me to the congressional baseball game. It was fun.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
There's there at Nats, whatever the field is, Nats Field. What is the name of the park?
Nationals Park.
Nationals Park.
Yeah.
Nice ballpark. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they put on a show. If you didn't know any better, you think you're attending a Major League Baseball game. I mean, mm-hmm. they put the whole stadium is up and running.
The atmosphere is incredible.
The atmosphere is a Major League event. The play on the field is not Major League at all.
I was reading
a bunch of overweight middle-aged politicians.
This makes me laugh.
Yeah.
I love it. Trying
to play baseball.
Yeah.
But it's a cool thing they do, and they've raised a lot of money. And the Republicans just smoked them again.
Yeah.
Happy about that.
Kind of sad, though, that they have to resort to this to raise money for local charities when they waste so much money. They raised $3 million in this week's game for local charities. I'm thinking that is literally not even the tax on the money that they waste every week up there.
That's correct. Yeah. And part of that is because they got a cut of the concessions and a hot dog's nearly $20.
Yeah.
But it's a fun event.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they do it, and it's a tradition. And maybe it brings them together
right.
in something as colleagues as opposed to opponents, and that's all good. And when you're watching them on the field, it seems very good-natured.
I was reading some stats about it this week. You know, there's been one tie over the years, and the GOP has generally won. They've won more than they've lost, but there have been several inside the park home runs over the decades. There have been three that were actually hit over the fence.
Really?
Ron Paul hit the first one.
You're kidding me.
He went yard.
Ron Paul went yard.
Okay.
In the congressional baseball game back in the 70s, I believe it was.
Can you imagine if we suited up and tried to play?
Oh, we could do that.
Would that be hysterical?
I was thinking about that the other day. If you handed me a baseball and said, throw it, it'd be like it was a shot put.
I know.
Like the Obama first pitch?
Yeah. I haven't thrown a – it would just be awful.
Yeah. You know?
Oh, so man. God bless them for
God
doing
bless
it.
Them. That's right.
God bless them.
It's still very bad baseball.
Well, let's go on to the next sports story. Missy, you're going to love this one.
I can't wait.
Your boy, Patrick Mahomes, our Tyler native and White House native, I guess. White House
grad. He's a graddy, yep.
Just became the first $500 million man in the NFL with his new contract extension, which takes him through age 38 and the 2033 season.
How much of that is? I saw the headline. How much of that's guaranteed?
I think it's $502 million.
That's guaranteed.
If I'm not mistaken, there's incentives that add another up to I think $60 million or something like that to it. It's a lot of money.
So that's guaranteed.
I believe so. I could be wrong. I didn't read it that closely. This was in the flurry of morning prep today.
My
so.
Contract says I don't have to do math on the air.
There so. You go.
Yeah. Nice. You drove a hard bargain on
that's
that.
Right.
I need to get that added to my contract. That's nice.
Well, there's two directions to go on that. It's a free Patrick Mahomes. You know,
good on him.
Good on him. The free market. The buyer and seller of service came together and said, "This is what it's worth."
Mm-hmm.
What it's worth for Patrick Mahomes to play, and what the Chiefs think it's worth to have him play. That's all free market stuff. But what does it say that in our society that a guy who plays a high school kid's game is getting $500 million to play it,
and we can't afford to go see it.
And the guy that, Joe from Brooklyn can't afford to go see the Knicks play the San Antonio Spurs.
Or for that matter, find the game.
Right.
What streaming service it's on.
Fred there in Kansas City can't afford a ticket in the end zone.
Yeah.
Because Patrick Mahomes is getting $500 million.
So football, of course, a very unique American invention.
The rest of the world calls what we call soccer football.
Exactly. But on this note of American inventions, as we celebrate America's 250th, we have about a minute and a half left here. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you guys, what do you think, Missy, is the... You want me to start with you, or should I start with the boss?
No, start with her.
Okay.
Oh, come on.
What do you think is the best invention that America has given the world?
Wow, Jeff. Oh, my gosh. There's so many. Oh.
Yeah, there's a lot. You think about this. At the turn of the last century, most things were powered by animals or steam.
Okay.
Now, and you had 1 billion people in the world, basically 1.5 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here we are 120 years later. 126 years later, and there are 8 billion people in the world.
Right.
Several diseases have been eradicated from the planet.
Yeah.
All
right, Missy, I'll take you off the hook.
Yeah, go for it.
Mechanized farming.
Mechanized farming. Okay. Nice.
That's how come you can feed 8 billion people instead of 1 billion people, because of mechanized farming.
Well, the I'm going to back that with mine. I'm going to say the mechanization of that farming is supported by Henry Ford's moving assembly line.
Okay.
Good for you guys.
I'll give you that. That's correct.
I hate to one-up you guys, but I'm going to say the cosmetic industry, because without cosmetics... You do not want to see what's going on behind the scenes.
You won't see that exploding population, right?
You don't want to see what's happening behind the scenes,
But you're looking good there, Missy.
Thank you very much. It's due to the cosmetic industry, and I would like to...
Well, I was kind of hoping you were going to go with the Foo Fighters. But,
the music, I do. I do appreciate some good rock and roll.
What percent of Americans in 1776, 250 years ago, how many of them farmed, like everybody?
Absolutely.
And how many farm today? 1%? Now we're feeding the entire country plus a big chunk of the rest of the world.
Yes. I think it's 1.75% right now. Something it was 87% in 1776.
Okay, and we're feeding the world. I mean, think about that. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing.
I do agree.
Well, folks, we're going to wrap it up on that note. We appreciate you joining us here on In Focus, and we will talk to you next time.
In Focus is a weekly public affairs program exploring local, state, and national issues that impact East Texas. In Focus is produced by KTBB and the Team Sports Radio. We thank you for listening. Join us again next week.